Have some people going on to professional study, fine. But our interest is not in, as Bill said, breaking people into little bits, but in helping them to get it together. Now, this next one may be a little bit difficult for some of our friends in the community who've been hoping for years for an adequate auditorium. Because this is an instructional building, it also follows that the audiences for presentations in it will be there for the benefit of the performers rather than the reverse. The major performance spaces, the experimental theater, which you'll be visiting, and the recital hall, which you're in, have been kept relatively small on the assumption that performers will learn more, will realize more of the investment of their time in the preparation of productions, if they can run a number of performances before smaller audiences, rather than one performance before a large audience. Though some visiting professional performers will no doubt appear in these spaces, and though we shall certainly encourage members of the Olympia community to attend the events here, these spaces do not amount to a public auditorium for the college and the Olympia area, nor to a compromise between instructional performance facilities and such an auditorium. The auditorium, by the way, logically should be constructed for Olympia as soon as possible. Another kind of principle, it accounts for the somewhat forbidding fortress-like aspect of the exterior of the building. Just as our laboratory buildings, phases 1 and 2, provide for activity in the lab sciences and the visual arts by careful attention to special requirements for energy, waste, disposal, ventilation, and other necessary conditions for carrying out hands-on work, so the activities contemplated for the communications lab belong here, because of their common needs for control over light and sound. Though the two-dimensional artwork to be carried on in the third floor studios needs the skylighting provided and will be located there to help with interdisciplinary work in the arts, the principle of controlling light and sound applies to drama, music, musical theater, dance, visual communications, and cinematography. Some of my colleagues, I think it's fair to say, quailed as we began to draw in lines. I think they would have been happier if we would have had wheelable partitions that could have been moved all over the lot. Such ideal flexibility would work against the appropriate insulation and equipping of these spaces. The planners have put thick walls around the experimental theater. You'll notice that we, in effect, have exterior walls around this space, the experimental theater, and so forth. They've done this so that performers and producers can control for artistic meaning whatever aural and visual images will be created in these spaces. In other words, if there's a light or a sound in one of these rooms, it will be because somebody wants to put it there. And that has some pretty strong implications. Several other bets that we've made, and I was talking with Emil about this, and I think he agreed that this is relatively true. Oberlin, in building its new conservatory, tried to get insulation by building separate pods, separate buildings, and then connecting them with, in effect, glassed-in walkways. The problem with that is you chew up a lot of space. It's great if you're trying to specialize activities, because the very distance of the pods will do that for you. It's very bad if you're moving harps and grand pianos all over the place. What we decided to do was, in effect, to put these separate buildings inside one structure for several reasons. We would chew up as little of the campus core as possible. We would juxtapose programs so that dancers, painters, musicians, actors could be working together. And thirdly, and it's also one of the reasons why our floors here are, in effect, sea-level floors, we're trying for as little means remove and especially ramp equipment as possible. The state, as some of you know, does not provide for maintenance funds, and although we will be pretty well equipped at the start, too much moving of things around could just wreck us. Now, there's some interesting detail. I can't get into much of the level of detail, but one of the things that happens when you jam your spaces this close together and yet require that they all be simultaneously usable for their main functions, you need an air conditioning and heating system that is probably one of the most complicated ever built. We cannot get into the mechanical room, but I've been assured by the subcontractors working on this that, let us say, the heroine can be gasping her last in the experimental theater while Don Chan's big band is reaching a forte fortissimo over here, and no sound will go through the air ducts. We'll soon know about that one, but supposedly that's the way that this has been designed. As you'll see, when we turn over to the plans, I think the architects have done a very imaginative job. For example, in a building that had to be like a fortress, they found a very nice way in our kind of little Kennedy Center lobby here of using a lot of glass. They found a way of providing audience access along the front of the building and backstage and student access along the rear of the building. They have pulled some really neat tricks about using interior spaces to insulate the large performance areas from each other. And this, I don't know, Emil, if this, you know, betokens my having been at Oberlin for 12 years, but every time with the old conservatory that a recital was going on in the recital hall, four floors of practice rooms on the side of a building were knocked out. You couldn't use them. What we are trying to do is, with the possible exception of the power saw, to be able to have every single space here be used for its main use at the same time. And thus, though, you know, it might not look as if we have many rooms for people to be working in, we look for quite a bit of saturation. A lot more could be said. When you get to see the experimental theater, you'll wonder, well, where are the seats? Where are the paintings and the little Baroque plaster cherubs? The experimental theater is a three-story high black box. The actors will work from modular wood sandwiches, which can be arranged production by production on a flat floor. The audience will sit in movable risers, which contain their own chairs, arms, and seat backs. A director will, in effect, be able to organize the audience any way she or he wants for a particular production and design the stage anyway. We are going to have tremendous flexibility, and as you'll see when you get in, the grid is very high, and the reason for that is that the room will also be able to as a film soundstage. We're making a large bet. It will be a room which, when some of you will start walking into it next fall for performances, you will not be in a jewel box. But then again, when the house lights go down, you will not be locked into a proscenium arch that is, you know, the sort of invisible fourth wall of somebody's parlor, except that all the furniture is facing out. Instead, we should be able to have a kind of flexibility here that very few instructional theaters in the world will have. I think you'll get a sense of it just by walking into that empty room, but then looking up at the grid and seeing what's possible. It is also extremely important to us that work here be not only live performance, but also the media work, audio recording, video recording and transmission, and film going along with this. Though it is true that the policy that I have followed and that my administrative colleagues have now been following is to give live performance priority in the building for two reasons. One, we do have some other specialized facilities for video and cinema work. We have not yet, as those of you who have heard performances in our lobby know, have any specialized facilities for live performance. And secondly, and though this may be a personal prejudice, I guess I feel that our civilization